Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Mike the Gardener podcast, sponsored by those lovely people at Natural Grower, who supply plant-based products for both organic and chemical-free gardening and your houseplants. Hello there, everyone, and welcome back. It's lovely to have you here again. And I hope, like me, you're managing to get out into the garden and just make the most of this fantastic autumn season. Here in my own garden, the leaves are just colouring up, but it's very late. It's been a very late autumn, and no sooner have the leaves started to colour up than they're starting to drop. But it's just on a clear blue skied day, it's just wonderful to get out into the garden and enjoy it. Now, today I'm chatting to Penstemon specialist Julian Mitchell, who's one of the owners of Green Jam Nurseries alongside husband Adam. Now, I know from my own experience of being a professional gardener and garden designer just how popular Penstemon are in our own gardens, providing colour throughout the season in a range of reds, pinks, blues and whites. And so today, in this plant special, we chat about everything you need to know about growing Penstemon. Julia tells me about where to grow them, soil requirements and how to grow them in containers, feeding, watering, pests and diseases and lots more. And it's clear that Julia is completely besotted by these beautiful plants.
So Penstemon for me are perfect because even a big blousy Penstemon like Laura and Czar are still beautifully subtle at the same time. Even now, I love getting excited about them. I just go out and go, oh, look at that. Oh, look at that.
I started our chat by asking Julia where her love of Penstemon came from.
Well, it's quite long lived, actually. When I was a student, I did an H&E at Pershore College. And in our final year, I couldn't decide what to do as a project. So with my best friend on my course at college, and along with the head of horticulture, who was Mark Simpkin, he said, oh, we're thinking about having a national collection of Penstemon at the college. Mm-hmm. Can you, would you like to do something with those? So that was back in 1992. So we went round other nurseries collecting Penstemon, increasing the range that there was at the college, dug them all up out of the border, put them under light. And we actually did a little exhibit at Malvern Spring back in 1992. And it was sort of from then on, really. And then in 95, the Pershore College got granted a national collection of pre-95 cultivars. So it's since I was 22.
Wow. Now, there's a bit of a coincidence there because I studied horticulture at Kingston Moorwood and they had a collection of Penstemons at Kingston Moorwood. So,
yeah.
So that's where it started for you.
Yes.
Yeah, and yeah, so then how do you go from being involved in that to setting up your own nursery?
Well, I went off what I call my sort of not wilderness years, but I used to run garden centres for about 20 years. And I got married, I wanted to have a child and I didn't want to put him in childcare. And you know what? I mean, when you're manager of a garden centre and it's a big garden centre, you work many, many hours, you know, 70, 80 hours a week.
Mm.
So I said, right, well, we need to set up our own nursery. So at that point, we did. That was in 2008. And it was just at the point where the college were building a new building for student accommodation. So where they were building it was where the national collection was housed next to the nursery, was outside, all planted out. And they'd had a few problems with it, with earworm and labelling and all sorts of things. And I said, right, OK, we'll get involved. We'll propagate everything that you've got. We'll look after it, produce more varieties, clean it up, make sure there's no earworm, and then we'll replant it for you in a year or two when everything's done. And this was about sort of 85, 90 varieties. So this is what they had in their national collection. So that's what we did. We looked after everything. We bulked it all up again, and then we replanted it all, three of everything, back at the college. I'm not sure whether we managed it by 2009, but it was certainly back done by 2010.
Goodness me, that's some massive undertaking then.
Yeah, it was. And it was something, though, I didn't want them to lose the national collection because it was something that I'd been involved in since day one. We didn't want a national, or I didn't want a national collection at Green Jam, because at the time we were just setting it up as a little garden centre and it was all quite, we had enough on our plate, basically. So we've supported their national collection ever since. So if ever they're missing varieties, we've given them back either as plants or they've come to the nursery and taken lots of cuttings over the years as well.
Oh, okay. Now, you've just mentioned the name of your nursery, Green Jam. Where does the name come from?
Well, I set it up when we set up originally, we set it up with a couple of friends who were ex-Pershore students, who one I used to work with. And we were sat in the pub one night and our names are Julia, Joe, Adam and Matt. And that was JJAM. And I said, well, we can't be Jam Nurseries. That just sounds a bit stupid. So we'll call it Green Jam because everything in it is going to be green. So that was that. And it's people really remember it, actually. That's the thing.
Yeah, it's a great marketing ploy because it sticks out, doesn't it? It's a memorable name.
Yeah.
So what are Penstemons?
I generally describe it, it's a bit like a posh foxglove. They're in the sort of white, pink and purple palette, bell-shaped flower, and they flower from the bottom up on a spike, and they are sun lovers.
And am I right in saying that one of the common names, at least, is beard tongues?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's generally that. I mean, that's from America, from the species. That's right. What they're called in America, is beard tongue. Which is just a weird name for them. And I've actually no idea where the origin of that is from. I have tried to find out, but yeah, a little bit unusual.
Yeah, it was only doing the research for this that I came across it. I'd never heard of beard tongue before. I've always known them as Penstemons and nothing else.
Yeah.
So a customer comes along to the nursery and buys a Penstemon. I want to actually go through what actually happens. So they get their Penstemon. Where is the best place for them to put their Penstemons?
We have a very simple list of do's and don'ts, which we give everybody that buys a Penstemon, whether it's at a show or at the nursery. And it just is just really simple. Things you should do, which is your do's, and things you shouldn't do, which is your don'ts. So in terms of do's, do plant in a sunny site is really, really important. The Penstemon will lose their vibrancy of colour and they also won't flower as well if they're in shade.
And in terms of sunlight, roughly how many hours should they have or do they like to have?
South facing is ideal, if not sort of west or southwest, so that they're getting that afternoon warm sun. Mm. So I would say generally really sort of 12 noon onwards is absolutely what you need.
Okay. So are there any Penstemons that will actually cope with more shade, or are they pretty much they need a lot?
I say that they need a lot. If you look on sort of labels, if you get pre-printed labels, the color labels that you get, they do say that they tolerate shade. I have had them in, if they're in dappled shade, so obviously, you know, below a tree or something where they are getting in and out of light with the leaves, and they would tolerate that more than being in the full shade of a hedge or anything. So in my personal opinion, I would say no, don't plant them in shade.
Keep them in the sunlight as best you can.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that makes that most obvious is when we exhibit them at a show and when they're in the floral marquee, literally after 6 or 7 days in a floral marquee, something that is purple flowered will have totally faded to white. And I can send you a couple of pictures of that.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, I took pictures at the end of Chelsea and at the beginning of the same variety. And by the end of the week, it was white.
Gosh, that's incredible.
So, yeah, I mean, they literally do completely lose their colour. But then I bring them back to the nursery, stick them back outside, and they will, that purple will come back again.
In new flowers, I take?
No, in the flower that's originally there that was white.
Wow, that's incredible. It will
recolour up purple again. Yeah, I don't know what it's called. I don't know what the technical scientific term for it is, but that is what they do.
Gosh, that's incredible. So in terms of soil then, what type of soil conditions do they thrive in?
Ideally well-drained. There's a couple of things. If you've got poorly drained soil, so like clay, which is what we had on our previous site and what we've got here, two sort of rules. Number one, improve the soil when you plant. But with something like grit or some good compost, not manure or anything, because you don't want to give them too much food. So improve the soil, mix that sort of 50-50 in with the clay that you're going to put back round, and also put some grit in the bottom of the hole. But well-drained is their ideal. So sandy soil, chalk, they'll grow on. And the other thing is, if you have got wet soil, don't plant them later in the year. So I would say sort of end of August at the very latest, but the earlier the better. So May is ideal. Mm-hmm. And then they get a really good established root system before they get to the winter wet, which is what is going to kill them if anything is.
So I was going to say it's that combination of wet and cold in the winter and a heavier soil that will do for especially a younger plant that hasn't gone in earlier in the season.
They need a really good root system, and make sure when you do plant, don't plant like a 9 centimeter pot, a small pot out. Plant something out that's at least a litre, so a sort of 4 or 5 inch pot, so it's got a good established root system before you plant them in the garden. They can be temperamental if they haven't got a good root system if they go into the ground.
So that's a bit of a tip there. If we were to buy a 9 centimeter pot, which is a smaller pot for any sort of like newer gardeners, maybe best to grow it on a little bit until it's established a better root system.
Before
putting
it
out into the garden.
And also if you buy plugs or anything through mail order, then make sure pop them on a couple of times and make sure you've got a decent size. I'm sort of doing this in the background, but something like that.
Four or five inches. Sort of like a large tennis ball sized root ball, something fairly sort of substantial in terms of root before it goes into the ground.
I mean, penstemon are really easy once they're in the garden. The trick for growing them as a nurseryman is actually getting them. They're really easy to root and they're really easy to grow in the garden. The difficulty is actually getting between those two stages, because they hate being overwatered in a pot when they haven't got an established root system. And if you overwater once and you then have, and they're then in a sort of, you then have a pretty rotten couple of days of weather or a week of weather with no sun, they couldn't curl up and die because they're too wet.
Wow. And those signs of death at that stage is just a browning of the foliage?
No, this is what's difficult though with them, is that the foliage will actually wilt.
Okay.
So they look like they are dry. It won't go brown. They will just wilt. And everyone thinks, oh gosh, it's it's wilting. I must water it more. And it's worse. So it's easy to tell because it's a wet wilt rather than a dry wilt. So if the leaves are remotely crusty, then it needs watering. If they are wilted and they feel, floppy and wet, then they are overwatered.
So that's really important, because you say, I think most people's reaction, a wilting plant, water it, but that's going to be the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, especially in the winter as well.
You talked about soil then. I was going to ask about acidity and alkalinity, but you've mentioned chalk, and generally sandy soil is more more acid. Any preference for...
No, happy in both. I've never grown them in acid soil. I've always lived and worked where it's been alkaline soil. But having spoken to customers and clients at Southern shows, so Hampton and Wisley, they've grown them perfectly successfully on acid soil as well.
Okay, that's really interesting. Now, something I meant to ask earlier, how many species penstemons are there?
I think certainly over 100. There's at least one native to every single American state. So from the south right up to Alaska, Mexico up to Alaska, there probably is a couple of hundred, actually. I need to check that. I could email you with that. But they are, they're native all over America and everywhere from the sort of alpine slopes up north and the Rockies and things down to the really hot desert conditions that you get in Mexico.
And of course, this is where their conditions, their love of sort of like the sun and more free draining conditions comes from.
Which you get on the mountains as well, because obviously it's never very wet on a mountain slope.
It tends to run away. I wanted to talk about containers. So generally we're going to put penstemons, well, I put all of mine in my borders, but what about container life?
Quite happy in containers. Obviously make sure that the pot isn't solid, on a flat surface for the winter. So either put it on some gravel or on some pot feet so the bottom of the pot can free drain. I would say put a couple of inches or a really good lot of crop in the bottom as well. And penstemon generally have two completely opposite types of habit. They're either very lax in their habit and what I would call quite scruffy, but lovely. The flowers always come up on a spike, but they have this lax habit underneath. Or they are very tall and upright and neat, and the leaves are all neat on them as well. For me, the second type, the neater type, are much better in pots, because obviously the lax habit doesn't do as well and never looks as good in a pot. There are sort of four varieties that have been bred specifically for pots, and that's the Volcano series. There's four in those. Yeah, red, purple, and two pinks. The varieties in those, the purple is Vesuvius, the red is Etna, and then there's Kilimanjaro and Fujiyama, which are the two pinks. And they only get to about sort of 2-2.5 feet, really neat, really prolific flowers as well.
Oh, that's news to me. Although I'm aware of those names, I didn't realise they were sort of like good in containers. That's really helpful. So in terms of hardiness, we've talked about winter wet, but how hardy are Penstemons? What sort of action do we need to take?
Well, the ones that we had originally, so about the sort of 110 varieties, some of which we had from Persia on, some from elsewhere. When we had that terrible winter in 2010, it went down to minus 12 in our glass house, which is where they were. And they all successfully went down to minus 12 and came out the other side. Mm. Some of them went completely brown, but then they reshooted again in the spring from the base. The issue is the wet. So as far as I'm concerned, in terms of hardiness, it's not the temperature that is the problem. It is the winter wet. So if you had a minus 12 and wet, then you could lose them. Mm. But in my mind, having, you know, had many years experience of growing them, it's actually the wet that's more likely to have killed them than the cold. It would be the combination of the two, but the wet would be the end of them. So I say that they are hardy provided they are treated properly and planted, you know, as I say, early in the year if they're in wet soil, and also not pruned until spring. And that is really, really important.
Let's pick up on that, because that's something that I have learnt in recent years. I remember reading years ago, prune them at the end of the season, like we do with a lot of our perennials, but it's not a good idea, is it?
No, definitely, definitely not. What I say is deadhead during the summer. So, you know, so you've got this nice, neat plant in the autumn, which is just full of green leaves, and you leave that completely. So you can take the old seed heads off, just to leave it nice and neat. And also it means that if it is really windy in the winter, then they're not going to get so damaged if they get rock against the roots, and leave that whole plant. It might go brown, it might be semi-evergreen, it might stay totally evergreen, but you just must leave it all. Firstly, obviously that does protect the crown if it does go really cold. And secondly, it gives the roots something to do. If you chop that top off, then the roots are just sat there in water and haven't got anything to do with the excess water that's around the base of the crown of the plant. It sounds silly, but, and I say this to people now, I've had so many customers, repeat customers now, thankfully come back and say, I've done what you said and it works. So I know it works. I've done it myself. So you just leave all that on over winter. Don't worry about what it's doing. Don't worry about tidying it, doing anything to it. Mm. And then in spring, and it's quite late spring, it might be April, it might be May.
Yeah.
And go by the plant. Don't go by, oh, it's April, I must cut my penstemon back. You must just look at the plant, and you might find you've got three different plants in your garden, three different penstemon in the garden of three different varieties, and they actually may well be ready to cut back at different times. So once the new shoots are 3 to 4 inches, and that will either be on the stem or it could just be the whole top's gone brown and they'll come from underneath, then you cut it back. We normally do it here either just before or just after Malvern Spring Gardening Show.
Okay. So, and that's early May, isn't it?
Yeah. So it is, but it's that 3 to 4 inches. So they'll start shooting in February. You'll see tiny little tips, but if you cut it back then, it's too early. And it will then rot, and it may well get a little bit frosted, but it's more likely that it's going to rot.
Now, this is always a big one for people. How far do you cut them down? Once you've got those signs of growth and it's more elongated, how far down do you cut?
Well, I'm quite brutal. I tend to, if I've got lots and lots of shoots coming actually from under the soil, and not many on the stem, then I will take all of the old stems out and just leave the new shoots coming from under the soil. So that will be all of the old wood completely and utterly gone. You may find that you've only got shoots on the stem. In which case I would cut the stem back either to sort of maximum 12 inches, minimum 6 inches, but make sure you leave a good crop of new shoots. And what we quite often find is people haven't cut them back for years because they don't know that they can.
Yeah.
So then I said, well, it may take you sort of a couple of years to be able to get back to down to having a really good crop low down on the plant. So you might only be able to go down to a foot for the first year and then 6 inches for the second. And then that will encourage more from under the soil for the third year.
So I know with mine, you do get that new growth, but it's waiting for that, as you say, to be a little bit more established and then going right in and being brave.
Yeah. Yeah. Cruel to be kind.
Definitely. And it does. It does sort of like they look like healthy, vigorous plants, despite the fact they might be a few years old. And picking up on that, on the age of a plant, what sort of lifespan should they have?
I do think it varies according to variety and also the conditions that they're grown in and also the harshness of the winters that you've had. We had them in the border at the old site and they were in clay, but we did improve the soil and they were in there 8 years, perfectly happily, still flowering, nice big bushy plants. I met a lady actually at Chelsea this year who has a Drinkstone Red in her border, and that has been in there for 30 years.
Goodness me.
The same plant.
So probably right plant, right place. Again, good conditions. Yeah. She's looking after it well. Just a couple of things I want to pick up on there then. The first and foremost, talking about the hardiness, is there any truth in the rumour that the narrower the leaf, the hardier the plant?
No, I don't think so. I suspect exactly where this comes from. There are two varieties. One is called Firebird, of which the proper name is Schoenholzerei, and the other one is Garnet.
Yes.
And the name of that is Andekanam Friedrichshain, which I can't pronounce very well. And both of those have got a thinner leaf.
Yeah.
And I think the reason, and both of those are far more tolerant of winter wet than any other variety. And I think this is where that has come from, because even if you did cut those back in the autumn, it is likely that they would survive because they are far more tolerant of the winter wet. But in my experience, having grown, you know, a lot of the pension varieties have got big fat leaves like Laura, Czar, varieties that, you know, the Pension Czar and Pension Laura are fantastic varieties that last year to year in the garden with big fat juicy leaves. So I'm sure that comes from Firebird and Garnet being thinner leaved, but being tolerant of winter wet.
Yeah, I think that is where it's come from, because it's something I picked up again from my Kingston Morwood days. And Garnet was one of the first penstemons I ever grew. And it is that very narrow leaf and quite tough, as you say. Picking up on this toughness, would mulching the ground have any benefit just to provide some more protection, or is that a bit of a misnomer?
If you mulched, then I would say you need to do it with something like straw, because you don't want to feed. So what you don't want to do is mulch with something like manure and things like that, that you would do to roses or maybe, you know, across your perennial border. So if you want to protect the crown and you have got wetter soil, it would also obviously stop the rain getting directly toward, you know, at the base of the plant. So I generally recommend it, if you're going to do it, then just mulch with straw around the crown, just put some in.
Now, another thing that we often hear about penstemons is if you have more vulnerable varieties, propagation towards the end of the season to secure crops for next year. How and when do you go about propagating penstemons?
Okay, well, you can probably do it year round, but the absolute ideal time is, I would say, August to September. They will still be flowering. So what you need to do is you choose a lower shoot, so a side shoot down at the base of the plant, or, you know, any of the side shoots that aren't going to become flowering shoots soon. So if you look at a shoot, you can see a flowering shoot has slightly more of a heart-shaped leaf to it. And they're generally towards the centre of the plant. And if you actually look at the plant, you'll see that the side shoots are still have that long, elongated leaf to them. And if you look at the ones at the top that are about to flower, they start to fatten up near the stem.
Yeah.
So you know that they are almost a flowering shoot as opposed to a growing shoot. So So by taking those side ones, I mean, you can root a flowering shoot, but it will never actually make such a good plant.
That's really interesting, right?
Yeah. So you want to use those side shoots. I generally do them. I mean, I've tried two different ways. I spoke to Rosie Hardy about cuttings once, and she does really, really short little tips.
Mm.
Just takes a few side shoots off, and that does work.
Mm.
But for me, I prefer to sort of do it what I call the old-fashioned way. So sort of, I suppose, 3 to 4 inches long, something like that, if you can.
Yeah.
Take off the first sort of couple of pairs of leaves off the node. Do it nice and cleanly. If you can do it with a fingernail rather than with a pair of snips, then it doesn't leave that little bit, or you can just rub it off.
Yeah.
And then I generally sort of pull the top bit, snip across the top to half the size of the leaves and the growing tip, but leaving the growing tip in, and then just plonk it in, you know, seed and cutting compost. Generally add some vermiculite just to make it a little bit more open so they're not too wet. Yeah. I mean, you see all those new shoots in spring and you think, oh, fantastic cutting shoots, but they are actually really difficult to root in sort of April, May, June time. You need to wait until they're a little bit tougher, more of a semi-ripe that you would get on a shrub. So, you know, at July, August, I mean, August is the ideal for me.
So you've got your cuttings, and like you, I'm from the school of like 3 or 4 inches. They're in a free draining compost. How long would it be before they actually start to develop a root system? And also, what sort of container do you put yours in when you're doing your cuttings?
Well, I do mine in plugs because obviously I can line them all up neatly. They all look the same, so they must be done neatly in trays in the same systematic order every time. So for me, it's easier to do it in plugs to make sure that I never muddle varieties up.
Yeah.
They would quite happily go in a pot. So in like a 9 centimeter, 3 inch pot, you could put 3 or 4 cuttings round. They should start to show root within a couple of weeks. But I would wait until you can see roots sort of coming out the bottom of the pot or coming out the bottom of the plug before you move them on to the next stage. So, I mean, again, the sort of tiny cuttings that the Hardys do, they are on a heated bench with a heated mat underneath, and they're in mist. So you need to be able to have them in ideal conditions, I think, for those shorter ones to tolerate, you know, to grow.
Strike, really well.
Yeah, so in perfect conditions, they'll do it. For me, I find the longer ones are easier. And having said that, I do mist quite a few times a day. This is a bit of a strange thing, but when my friend comes and helps and we're working and I'm doing cuttings, every time one or other of us nips to the loo, we have a thing that you have to mist the cuttings. So we know that it happens quite a few times a day. You might want to delete that bit.
Absolutely not.
So we nip quite a few times a day between the two of us. And it's like you either go before you go and miss the cuttings, or you go when you come back and miss the cuttings. And that's the thing now.
Right.
Every time you nip to the loo, come back, miss the cuttings. And it means they probably get done 10 times a day.
Okay. Well, I'm going to pick up on that as well, because I think we generally hear about cuttings being covered in a plastic bag. So is that, I mean, obviously it will provide humidity, but if you're misting...
Yeah.
Is that the better way of doing it? So you get some more air circulation around the cuttings?
Yeah. Yeah. I would never put a plastic bag over penstemon. And they can get botrytis quite quickly if they are in too, you know, sort of, you don't want that humidity. You do want it, but you want it with the airflow and everything as well. You know, our propagation house is automatically ventilated. So there's lots of airflow through there. And a day like today where it's sunny outside as well, I'll have the door open, the vents open one end, and then all the windows that are, you know, opening on the auto vents. So there's lots of airflow through. So they're warm, but they've got lots of airflow. And I definitely wouldn't put a plastic bag over them, not on a windowsill or anything either.
Not a windowsill, did you say?
Don't put a bag over them if they're on a windowsill. And also, I mean, you don't want to put them on a south-facing windowsill because they'll probably get too dry too quickly. So, you know, east or west, somewhere or a little bit further in. But, greenhouse would be ideal. But obviously making sure that you do mist them. Or, I mean, you can put a bit of fleece over the top if it's a really hot, sunny day. The best thing to do would just be to pop a bit of fleece over the top. So they're not in that direct sunlight, the hot sunlight, especially in August. And also that will retain the humidity around the plant, but also let the air circulate.
So if you're taking your cuttings, let's say in August, a few weeks for them to root, are you actually going to pop those on before the end of the season and put them into their own sort of like little modules before winter?
Yeah, I would do. Yeah. And I have already done a batch that I did in August and they're potted now. I've kept them in the prop house for now until their root system gets down completely, and then they'll just go in a cold tunnel for the winter. But yes, I would do. So as soon as a penstemon is sort of rooted through in the container that it's in, move it on to the next one. If you knock it out and you find that it hasn't got such a good root system as the one next to it, I would actually pop it back into the smaller size until it has got a really good root system.
Okay.
And I'll be going through, and it may be that, you know, I've got a cell tray with 100 cells in it, but I'll look for what's rooted through. I'll just push those out with a dibber and pop those on and just pop the others back in until they're ready.
Mm.
So now just play it by ear. And again, look at the plant, you know, go with when the plant looks like it's happy and ready to go.
Yeah, and that's something I think as gardeners, it's really key. Just look at your plants, get to know them intimately, see what they're actually telling you, because they do sort of like give little signs, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, just because one's ready doesn't mean that the whole batch will be. And obviously also you might have different varieties in a tray.
Yeah.
Which is obviously slightly different for me doing it commercially, but some will root quicker than others. You know, you might find that some are rooted and ready to be potted within 3 weeks in August. Others might take until October. So
treating them independently and looking at each cutting. To recap on the compost you use for cuttings, you've got a cuttings compost with vermiculite, something to open it up. Would a multi-purpose, either peat-free or the other?
Well, multi-purpose, I think, has got too much feed in it, too much base feed. So you want something. I mean, I buy Sinclair seed and cutting compost. What I've done, I have actually just recently bought 4 pallets of peat-free. So last year I was only 40% peat for the penstemon. I know that Rosie and Rob Hardy they propagate straight into that peat-free, but I have mixed that a bag of that along with the bag of seed and cutting. So peat-free, yes, I'm perfectly happy as long as it hasn't got feed in it. You don't want feed in it at this stage at all.
So it's just about root development, getting those roots growing away before we actually start thinking about the top growth part of things.
Feeding. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's go back to the maintenance of established plants. Now we've looked at how we propagate them. What about feeding and watering during the course of the season when they're actually growing away?
You don't need to feed them. Shouldn't need to feed them at all ever if they are in the border. Now, obviously, I've grown them in clay, so there is always good nutrition in clay because it retains the nutrient better than free draining soil.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's a little bit go by the plant. If you find that they aren't flowering very well and they are in a sunny position, then I would say half strength Tomerite, but only do and feed it. You can feed it, obviously, either water it on the plant if it's not sunny or just feed the water at the base. And again, probably only once a month. I mean, I have until this year, so just before we were doing Chelsea, I have never fed my show penstemon or my stock penstemon in their pots. All they have in there is a slow release fertilizer.
Okay.
So I've never fed them with anything. So everything that has been flowering on our exhibits for the last 7 or 8 years has never been supplementary fed.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and in the border, you shouldn't feed them. I mean, we get so many people that say, oh, my penstemon aren't flowering. And I say, oh, have you fed them? And like, oh, yes, I've given them lots of manure. Or I've fed them Miracle-Gro. And that's why. You'll just get loads and loads of green growth and no flower. So don't feed them. I would only water when you first plant them if it is dry, you know, if you get a dry and sunny few weeks. But otherwise, again, no watering needed during the summer. And no feeding needed during the summer, in a pot possibly, but not really otherwise.
So it's real tough love for our penstemons.
Very much so, very much so. The kinder you are, the less they will reward you with flower.
I wanted to touch on pests and diseases. We touched on earworm. You mentioned earworm earlier. Tell me about pests and diseases. What pests and diseases attack penstemons?
The minimal pests and diseases, actually, to be honest. The in terms of pests, earworm is an issue, I think, if you are growing them commercially or if you have a lot in a border together, so something like a national collection. For the general gardener, earworm shouldn't be an issue as long as you buy clean stock in the first place. So if you buy a plant that hasn't got earworm, it will never get earworm. Earworm is a tiny microscopic thing that travels between plants in the soil. So if you plant a single penstemon with earworm, it will eventually spread to all the others. I mean, our stock obviously hasn't got earworm and is absolutely clean. But when you buy a penstemon in the first place, just make sure that the foliage on it is all healthy. You might get a couple of brown leaves at the bottom, but if there's any signs of distortion or wrinkling, or if half of the leaf is brown and half of the leaf is green, and that brown half is a little bit distorted, then that's potentially signs of earworm. So just don't buy it and don't put it in your garden. So, but for gardeners, I wouldn't worry about earworm. It's not an issue. It's just particularly for nurserymen and for people that are growing them commercially. Slugs and snails, don't touch them at all, which is absolutely fantastic.
Such good news.
I mean, they just don't. And neither do rabbits and neither do deer, actually. And I think it's all for the same reason, is that if you the species have a slight scent to them, which isn't very nice, if they get really dry, I can smell it. I can only smell it if a plant is stressed or really dry. And it has this sort of strange, I mean, I can describe it as a pungent odor. I can't describe the actual smell. And you think, oh, I need to water. On the species, I have never smelt it on any of the hybrids, but I would presume that animals have a better sense of smell than me. And it is therefore, because the hybrids were bred from these species, it's still residual in the foliage. And that's the only reason I can think why they don't eat them. And, you know, it is brilliant. And they never have. I've never seen any damage from slugs and snails on any penstemon in 13 years.
No, I've never seen it either. And that's one of the joyous things in a garden where I have a lot of slugs and snails, which will attack my dahlias, my hostas, my ligularias. Penstemons stand loud and proud. They'll flower their socks off. So hallelujah for that. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of other pests, they would only ever really get affected by anything if they were under stress. So if they were in a greenhouse and they were really, really hot and they weren't getting water properly or anything like that, then potentially you could get, you know, a bit of green fly or a bit of white fly, but that would already be on something else, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So in the garden, there are no actual pests that are an issue to them. I mean, you might get an occasional caterpillar that, you know, makes a little bed at the top of a flowering shoot, but it's not, you know, it's just that they're there in the garden anyway on other things and it's just made a nest. So it's not that it's thinking, oh, I'll go on a penstemon because I love it.
Yeah.
Diseases, I mean, there aren't really any. They'll get a little bit of mildew, but again, only if under stress. I have found this year, I mean, I very, very rarely spray the nursery for anything. I'm very lucky because I grow penstemon and I don't need to. But this year, with the new compost that we've had, I think that's been a slight factor in that I have had to spray for mildew a couple of times, but only because I think this new sort of almost peat-free compost has made it difficult to have consistent watering. So at times they've been dry or they've been a little bit too wet. Therefore, that's made them a little bit more susceptible to mildew. I understand mildew has been rife this year anyway. So many customers at shows have said that.
I've not had it in my own garden this year, but as I say, I have penstemons, which I can pretty much just leave and not have to worry about them, which is an absolute delight, I have to say.
Yeah, in the garden, I don't think you would ever need to spray them for anything, to be honest.
No. Deadheading. So penstemons start to flower. They grow away. They start to flower. I mean, they're prolific flowers as well, I have to say. You really do get sort of plenty of flower for your buck.
Yeah.
Tell us about deadheading.
So they flower from the bottom of the spike up. The flowers, you know, open from the bottom of the spike up. And it, generally, it can be about a month for an actual flower spike from start to finish. As the flowers develop, the bottom flowers will drop off and you'll find that they'll sort of start and turn to seed heads. So by the time you get to the top of the spike and the actual flower colour then has dropped off, you will just have a seed head on the top of the foliage, obviously, on the plant. Mm. So it's generally about the top third. And what you want to do is cut that entire seed head off, you know, all of them together, and have a look down where you get to the bottom of where those seed heads are. There'll be obviously a pair of leaves because they have alternate leaves on the thing. And then there'll be a next pair of leaves, the next one down. Have a look at that. The first pair of leaves might not have a new growing tip in it.
No.
Okay, so there'll be two little side shoots there.
That will
turn into two new flowering shoots. And sometimes the first and second one, you can't see that tiny little growing tip. So I would go down to wherever that growing tip is. So sometimes it's a sort of second or third pair of leaves below what was the old flower spike. And that's what you take it back to. And you only need to do that about once a month. So it's only for sort of 4 or 5 months while they're flowering, and just nip those off, and that will just keep them flowering. So they're not like other perennials where you get a flush of flower and then that's it. And you cut them all off and then you get another flush of flower. Mm. If you can be bothered to nip out with a cup of tea, do that once a month, then they will just keep flowering for 6 months.
You talked about the flower heads that we're cutting off, and you talked about seed. Can you grow penstemons from seed, and are they true?
No. The hybrids, so the named hybrids, won't come true to type. So you have to do those from cuttings. The species obviously will come true to type, and we've only just recently started growing those. So I've got some out there brewing seed at the moment that I'm going to try and collect the seed from. And I generally wait until they actually rattle on the plant before I do it. But yeah, I mean, having said that, if you're obsessed with penstemon and you love them, you could leave a seed head, so a full spike of seed head on something that you really love, because it will probably come out of something different, because obviously the bees are going all between all the different penstemon and flowers as well. So you may well end up with a totally new variety. So that's how quite often people get new varieties, either by doing it with a paintbrush or just by selecting the seed heads when they're ripe and seeing what comes up.
And when you say with a paintbrush, that's like the pollination. You're taking the pollen off one plant and putting it onto the stigma of another.
Yeah, I'm not too knowledgeable on that. I'm just literally on the verge of starting to do that next year. So I want to start breeding now I've got the propagation house, and we're you know, on the verge of applying for a national collection. So I want to start, I don't want to go mad. I don't need to introduce another 50 varieties of penstemon. Mm. If I could just get like one of each colour that are really stonking doers, then that's my sort of ambition, really.
Oh, well, fingers crossed on that one. In terms of division of penstemons, can they be divided in the way some herbaceous perennials can?
Not the hybrids again.
No.
So the ones, they have a sort of almost like a sub-shrub type structure. People say, oh, I've divided my penstemon. Actually, you haven't divided it. What you've done is you've picked up where it's layered.
Mm.
So they will layer. So those ones that I've talked about that have a lax habit, like Andecon and Schoenholzerei, they will actually go along the ground and they will layer. And so where you've got a shoot that's layered, it will root here. You can chop that bit off and you've then got all. And so people think, oh, I've divided it. That's different. The division is actually chopping that whole plant up.
Mm.
And you can't do that, but you can layer them. The other thing is some of the species and varieties like Dark Towers, which has a rosette of leaves at the bottom, and also probably things like Heavenly Blue, Glaber, you know, the spring flowering early ones, Husker Red,
yes.
You can divide all of those.
So you can divide Husker's Red?
Yes, because it has this very different habit. With this rosette of leaves at the bottom. So once it's established, you can either just pull a single sort of, you know, few leaves off with a single sort of root, not single root, but you'll get sort of 5 or 6 bits of root coming down on it. Or you can cut the whole big plant in half. So any of the ones that what I call are close to the species, rather than the big hybrids with the, you know, parallel opposite green leaves, those you can't divide. Those that look like the species, you can.
So when would you do that division? Is that autumn or is it better in the spring?
You can do either. It depends where you're going to put them afterwards. So if you're going to divide it and then stick it back in the garden, it's got to be spring. If you're going to divide it and you want to make lots to give to friends and family or the neighbours or whatever, then you can do it quite happily in the autumn. but you would obviously need to pop the sort of small divisions that you've made into a pot and keep them somewhere in a cold frame, cold greenhouse, polytunnel, yeah, anything like that for the winter to grow them on.
Well, I love Huskers Red.
Yeah.
So I know what I'll be doing this afternoon, because I didn't actually know that. I knew that sort of like your garnet, you can't divide those because it's quite a woody sort of crown, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my afternoon sorted now. Thank you, Julia.
I'll tell you what, fascinating fact I just found out, Husker Red was perennial of the year in America in 1995. I never knew, I read it the other day, I read Penston and stuff.
Okay.
But it was that, yeah, that sort of, you know, such a huge accolade attached to it. I never knew that.
It's a beautiful plant, and obviously the red is referring to the foliage rather than flowers, because they have very small white flowers. Anything else in terms of maintenance we need to consider during the course of the season?
No. I mean, that's the good thing about them, really, is that they are, once they're in the ground, they are so trouble-free.
Mm.
Just that pruning in the spring, deadhead in the summer, that's all you need to worry about. So no. They are so trouble-free. That's it.
Planting partners, what do you... I mean, I have them alongside grasses and other perennials. Any particular favourite planting partners for you?
Hardy geraniums, I think, are absolutely fantastic with them. And I'm going to say something that my husband always tells me off for now, is that I think the bottom two-thirds of a pentstemon is actually really boring.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's just, you know, the leaves are, apart from, as we were talking about, Husker Red and a few of the other species, the leaves are actually quite dull.
Mm.
There's nothing exciting about a pentstemon leaf. So which is why when we exhibit them, I mix them. I think they're fantastic with grasses. And I think that's going back to where you would find them in America. You know, you find them on the prairies and stuff, so they look brilliant with grasses, all of the grasses, and I love them with hardy geraniums as well.
Mm.
Because they just, I quite often sort of wend them through doing exhibits, and I've in the border you know, at our old site, we're just about to plant our stock borders here, but it's lovely to have something that sort of goes and just covers that bottom part of the plant a little bit.
Mm.
And I think, you know, planting them en masse, I just think they mix with perennials so well. So really any perennials that that are sun lovers.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're great with the yellows as well, because they've got such a range of colours in the pentstemon. None of the pentstemon clash.
No.
You know, you can plant any pentstemons next to each other and they would never clash. And actually, most things will go with them as well, whether they're bright yellow or whether they're, you know, they look fab with blue, because there isn't that vivid blue in the pentstemon.
No.
So there's lots of, campanulas they look lovely with as well.
So some great associations there. And again, I love the idea of planting them en masse. I think it just gives such impact.
Yeah, very much so.
So we talked about the pentstemons in containers earlier. What planting companions might you consider for containers?
Personally, I don't think you would need to add anything to the container because the pentstemon is going to be so big.
Yeah.
I think mixing three or four containers next to each other with other things in the other containers, if that makes sense, but just leave a single container with one pentstemon in it. It will fill it. I just think they just don't like, same as in the border, really, although you can plant en masse and plant lots of other things with them, they don't like to be crowded.
No.
So in a container, one pentstemon, three other containers or four other containers with it, and put your other perennials or your bedding or whatever in those other containers, not actually in the container with the pentstemon.
Now, again, just touching on the feeding, because we often talk about the need to feed and water containers because they're not in the ground.
Yeah.
Does the same apply, though? Don't overfeed your container pentstemons?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it depends obviously on when it's planted. So if you've planted in a good multi-purpose compost, whether it be peat-free or with peat, and you've done that in the in spring when you planted the pentstemon out into that container, you shouldn't need to supplementary feed that year, okay? Because there should be enough food if you've got them in a good compost anyway. It's the following year that you may want to do it. But as I said, I mean, I would probably once a month half-strength Tomerite. And just water it in rather than spraying it over the foliage, or maxi crop, something like that as well.
Yeah.
Miracle-Grow is a bit strong in nitrogen, really, for them. So you might end up with this really big leafy thing and not a lot of flower.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need the potash.
In terms of, I mean, there are thousands, I guess, of Penstemon varieties. Are there any particular special ones that you particularly like? Any favourites of yours?
We've expanded our range quite a lot over the last couple of years, and I've now got over 200 varieties. Wow. And I have to say that my favourites do change quite often, depending on what the plant looks like. I love the Village series, which were actually bred at Pershore College, because all of them, there's five or six varieties in there. So there's Breeden, Overbury, Comberton, trying to remember the rest now, Ashton. I think there's five or six all together, but all of them are quite different, quite marked inside the throat, and really easy to grow and good doers, really sturdy, good growers, but all very, very different. So Village series, certainly a favourite. I love Garnet. I know it's boring, but it's
I love Garnet as well. I love Garnet.
Yeah, it's just such a good doer. I love that wine red of the flower.
Yeah, me too. And
I like going back. I mean, things like Huel Pink Bedder, which is a really, really old variety, like back to the early 1900s. I love the oldies because I love the fact that, you know, when I'm propagating one, I think this actually has come from that one that was originally bred in 1869, you know.
Wow.
I love things like that. But in terms of red, my favourite red is probably Oakley Red, which I'm really short of stock of it at the moment because it's a really big flower. And really beautifully marked inside. So I quite often like them that they're marked inside the flat, inside the throat. I like
that detail.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. And Razzle Dazzle, which you've probably never heard of, is another red. It's a slightly smaller flower, but it's got a really, really dark stem on it.
Oh, nice.
We do use it quite. So it just, you know, if you put it in an exhibit and people go, "What's that one?" every time pointing to that as a red. In like the whole world of life of flowering plants, I don't like big blousy flowers.
No.
So Penstemon for me are perfect because even a big blousy Penstemon like Laura and Czar
are
still beautifully subtle at the same time.
Yeah, it's not like a big blousy dahlia. It has got its own refinement and beauty.
Yeah. I adore the species. I've got a new species that I've grown from seed, grew it this year for the first time. So I'm just trialing those at the moment. I'm not selling them yet. I want to try them outside. I'm going to plant some out in the border. I want to try them for a couple of years to see how well they do actually in our soil and in our climate. But there's one in there called Smalley Eye Violet Dusk. And it's just like, oh. Even now I love getting excited about them. I just go out and go, oh, look at that.
Writing so many names down. I shall be on your website in a minute. And talking of which, you can buy directly from you on your website.
Yeah, we are literally just, I did a half my stock take yesterday until it started chucking it down with rain too much. So I'll finish stock take today. So we are only just starting to do mail order. I don't know if I didn't mention, but we only moved site last year. So we've been on a third of an acre for the last 10 years.
Okay.
The nursery's now on a couple of acres.
Wow.
And we've built buildings and tunnels and everything like that. So we are now in a position that we can start and do mail order. So I'm just literally, hopefully, by the end of the day today, going to list what would be available for spring dispatch. So we won't ever send them out in the winter because I wouldn't want you to plant it or anybody else to plant it during the winter and it just dies on you. So we will start sending out in April and May. We'll list what would be ready for sort of early spring now. And then as the ones that that we've got all the cuttings of, and as they're grown on and I know they're all fine and dandy, they will be listed throughout the season up until sort of September next year when we will have a cutoff point again, ready for the following spring. So I used to do mail order with Fibrex many, many years ago, and I know how big an undertaking it is to do and to make that commitment to not disappoint people with wanting either certain varieties or not having enough stock available, which is why we've sort of been on the new site for a year, built up our quantities. So now we can do mail order properly, hopefully.
So we can almost like pre-order now, or is it just seeing? Yeah, we can pre-order. Yeah, yeah. So if anybody's really itching to get onto your website, because I know I am, and I know a lot of my listeners will be as well.
Yes, from tomorrow you can pre-order.
Well, that's good news for everybody, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, where can we expect to see you next year? You've been very successful this year. You've had a great year in terms of the flower shows.
Yeah.
Blow your trumpet. Yeah. How have you done this year at the flower shows?
I mean, we had three goals at the three big RHS shows, one after the other, which is just, I mean, we'd had one previous gold in 2015 with the Pentstemon. Other than that, we've been silver gilts all the way. Being on the new site, I think, has meant that we've had a much bigger range of show plants to choose from. My husband, who's the ex-hairdresser, has been helping me do the stand. So he's had that little fingers out, little scissors out, fine detail to go over every single plant. And I think, you know, it does take, I mean, I've been doing shows 7 years now, I think, and it does take that long, I think, to get your eye in with what the judges are looking for, and what you think goes together, the proportions, the dimension, everything. I always try and do a little snippet of a garden so that somebody that comes to look at it thinks, I could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're showing them what it could be like.
Yes. Yes. What Pentstemon will look like in your garden blended with other perennials. So yeah, we've had an absolutely stonking year.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And Chelsea was the pinnacle because it was in September.
Yeah.
We could do Pentstemon.
So, yes, of course.
Yeah. So any May, I've always gone, no, I'm not doing Chelsea because they're just not in flower. So we're not doing Chelsea next year.
No, for that reason.
For that reason at the moment. I've just literally done the applications last week for all of the other big shows. So hopefully we'll be doing those again.
Good.
And a blend of the White Nursery and Pentstemon with those. But we are going to try and do Pentstemon at Chelsea in 2024. Once we've trialed the species, because they naturally flower in May.
Okay, so that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about doing a sort of species Pentstemon along with any of the hybrids that I can force into flower, because I just think, you know, they're so beautiful, they're so delicate, and I've already got in my head of maybe sort of doing a little bit of a prairie garden with the Pentstemon species.
Sounds wonderful. Julia, it's been fascinating chatting to you, because I'm, as a keen gardener, I know a fair bit about Pentstemons, but I've learned so much here today chatting to you, so thank you for that. Point people in the direction of your website so that when they finish listening to this in the next few minutes, they can head off. Where do they need to go to?
We are www.greenjam, and that's with a double J.co.uk.
Thank you so much. Head off to the website, everybody. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your expertise. And I wish you all the very best for your shows next year.
Thank you very much. Thanks. It's been lovely talking to you.
Well, what a fascinating chat about Pentstemon from a real enthusiast, specialist, and obvious lover of these beautiful plants. So there's no excuses now. We all know how to grow perfect Pentstemon. And for more information, you can head to the Green Jam website, which is www.greenjjam.co.uk. And from here, as I'm sure, like mine, your appetite has been well and truly whetted, you can shop online for Pentstemon and other beautiful perennials too. My thanks to Julia for her time and sharing her invaluable knowledge with us all here today. And I'll be back here again next week with another Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And if you haven't already, don't forget to follow and subscribe. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please do leave a review. Now, if you want to contact me, please drop me a line at the show's email address, mikethegardener01@gmail.com. And that's Mike with an M-I-C. Or you can follow me on my Instagram page, which is Mike_thegardener, and that's Mike, M-I-K-E. And I really do love hearing from you all with your lovely comments and ideas for future podcasts. So I will see you here next week. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.